Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, including this one, just as soon as we get off the air, are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now this time we're going to talk about optimism and what it means to be optimistic and how we can encourage it in our participants. Because it's rather a good thing, isn't it? If you're optimistic, it means that you think you're going to succeed, that you have a good attitude. So I think that our first question, oftentimes we do this, of course, is we're going to talk about what is optimism. We're going to define it, I suppose, and we're going to discuss what it is that we mean when we're talking about optimism. And I see that we have lots of participation. Thank you very much for all of your participation and for coming and for listening. And let's see, Daniel and others are giving a very good definition of optimism. He says it's being willing to always see the good in other people. Being willing to always see the good in other people. Being non-critical of others and seeing their good side. Seeing that their opinions have value. That their motives are not tainted. That they're good. Being able to see the good in other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, an interesting point is being made, and thank you for all of your participation, that when we talk about the good in other people, it's not just our fellow participants, is it? It's the good in the bitter side, thinking that people have fine attributes, and really they do, of all the people that are impacted, that we are impacting with our discussions, with our decisions, with our, well, whatever it is we're doing, our seminar, our workshop, our mediation, our group participation. We might be trying to change a law. We might be trying to influence legislation. Yeah, being willing to always see the good in other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point that's also being made by quite a few people, and thank you for all of your participation, that you have to be sensible, too, and not just say, well, everybody is good. They have to be able to think about people's traits and their motivations, but to see it from a positive standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are using a phrase that I think is probably an Americanism, and, of course, I happen to be an American, but this is a global show, and Carol and others are using the phrase, you look on the bright side. You look at the good in other people. You look at the optimistic part. You look on the bright side of the issue. And you don't just see the negative or dwell on the negative. Yeah. Arden and others are saying that optimism is confidence in a positive outcome. Confidence in a positive outcome. And I think, you know, we've talked about preconceived notions before on these shows, and that comes into this too. If you have a preconceived notion that it's not going to work and that the problems, the obstacles are insurmountable, well, it's probably not going to work and the obstacles are insurmountable because you've rather made up your mind ahead of time. as you won't really look for the solutions. You won't be imaginative. You go, oh, well, I just knew that that was going to happen, and walk away. And that's what confidence in a positive outcome is, the flip side of that. It's a preconceived notion that, yes, we will reach our goal. We will have a successful outcome no matter what. And when problems or obstacles present themselves, you go, well, I knew there would be some obstacles, but we're going to have a positive outcome, and we're going to solve this. We're going to go forward. And it's very important. It's a positive preconceived notion. You know, we often think of preconceived notions as just the negative ones, and those are the ones that we talk about the most. But, yeah. People ask me what a preconceived notion is. It is an idea that you come into the process with, something that you've thought about ahead of time, and you go, well, I think this is going to be the outcome. In fact, I'm rather sure of it. And sometimes they are negative, and sometimes you have such a preconceived notion, such an idea ahead of time of what the outcome is going to be, that the facts, the outcome, the situation, the process twists. You kind of unconsciously make it fit your preconceived notion, which is why a positive one is such a good idea. And a negative one will actually harm it. There have been studies that show that if people come in with an idea, with the concept that the whole thing's going to fail, it actually will. And it's not because they've done something deliberate. It's just that it's the attitude you come in with, to a great extent. We have lots of participation. Thank you. A lot of people, let's see, we're defining what optimism is, and Terry and others think that optimism is positive thinking. And that's what we just talked about with the preconceived notion, isn't it? That we will succeed. We will have a successful outcome. Our goals will be reached. That's a given. And then we work from there. Instead of, oh, this is impossible, no one's ever done it before. No, we will do it. You see, that's positive thinking. And we have people saying positive attitude. Very similar, I think, don't you? Mm-hmm. Positive thinking and positive attitude, that we will get to a successful outcome. We will not let obstacles stop us. But thinking and attitude, and always using, a lot of people using the terms positive outlook. Mm-hmm. Pretty similar attitude and thinking and outlook. We come with our certainty of that we will succeed, which will help us to do so, because it will cause us to think outside the box, to look at other options. Mm-hmm. Optimism is positive style. Several people using the term style, and the way that you present yourself. Positive personality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, optimism is all of these things, isn't it? And you know, this is an interesting point. A lot of people are pointing out that in order to have optimism and have it be reasonable, because, I mean, we're reasonable people, and we live in a practical, real world, and this is not, we never do a theoretical example. It's not helpful to us. Then in order to have optimism that is going to be rewarded, and optimism that is going to be emulated, and optimism that is reasonable, that we're going to get done, you have to have persistence. Persistence, yes. You have to not quit. You have to keep going. Because sometimes, you know, we talk about the path on these shows, the path to a successful outcome, as though it is something that is straightforward. And you just have to find it, and you just have to keep working your way down it. Sometimes the path diverges, right? Or it doesn't look like you're going to make it. You have to change your model. Yeah, you have to change your path or modify it so that you can reach a successful outcome. You just have to think differently about it. Yeah, good point. Persistence. Yes, a very excellent trait. So now we've talked about what optimism is, and how we can have it, yes. So how are we going to encourage optimism in our participants? You can't be the only optimist in the room. You need the group to go with you. How are we going to encourage that? How are we going to say, well, it's not easy, but we knew it wasn't going to be easy to begin with. And now we're going to go forward to success. We're going to figure it out together. You need your group to have optimism, too. So how could we encourage optimism in others? Yeah. Gottfried and others are saying that you encourage optimism by refusing to give up. Follow me. I'm not giving up. I'm not laying down the flag. I'm going to keep going. We're going to find another way. We're going to keep at it. We're going to be persistent. And we're going to have a positive thinking, a positive attitude, outlook, style, personality. All these things are going to combine. And we are not going to give up. Good point. Yeah. We've got a lot of agreement with that. Well, and other people, well, okay, we've got some agreement, we've got some dissension, because people are saying that sometimes it's a strength to know when to give up, and it's not a sign that you're not still optimistic about the ultimate conclusion, just not right at this minute. And let's think about that. I think usually instead of giving up, what we do is we modify, perhaps modify the goal, modify how we are approaching it. I don't think it's ever, no, I don't believe I've ever plain ordinary given up. Changed, yes. Modified, yes. Yeah, put off to the future sometimes. People are saying that they have tabled something. You know, left kind of, it's a metaphor, left it on the table because we couldn't really deal with it at the moment because the time wasn't right. This is true to a lot of people are saying, and thank you for all of your participation, that sometimes it's not giving up exactly. You encourage optimism by not giving up. But sometimes you can no longer push forward at this time. Oftentimes, as people are pointing out, for economic reasons. Well, we've run out of money, and we've run out of funding, or the circumstances have changed. We're going to have to do what? Yes, not just quit because we were on a side that we thought was important, and we are optimistic that the outcome will occur eventually. We just have to regroup, don't we? Yeah, regroup. Optimists regroup all the time. We go, well, that's not going to work out at this time. We've run out of money. We've run out of backing. Something external to our group has changed that causes us to need to rethink what we're doing. That's the key, rethink what we're doing. Might not be this instance the optimistic outcome, but never give up. We'll regroup, we'll rethink. We will retry, yeah. Refusing to give up. You know, Lavani and others are saying that optimism, that you encourage optimism in others by finding another path through discussion and participant input. You encourage optimism in others by finding another path through discussion and participant input. Yes, you have to include everybody. Otherwise, they won't feel as optimistic as you do. And when people really have given up hope, they really don't think it's going to happen, they really won't work, and it'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy in that respect too, because people go, oh my, it was a good try, but this time it didn't work, and then they will wander off and stop working at it, because they've got it in their mind that it's not going to work. So refusing to give up is also regrouping. It's doing a practical approach so that we can all succeed. Yeah. They're finding another path through discussion and participant input. We got to ask everybody. Yeah, Lavani and others are right. You have to ask your participants, what should we do? Should we regroup? Should we? If the, sometimes the group is very unwieldy and there are distinct sides who are willing to work together to make a common goal, but the group will, sometimes you need to regroup along lines like that, along commonality. Mm-hmm. You know, Khan and others are saying an interesting thing that I didn't think about. He says that optimism is contagious. If you act in an optimistic manner, then everybody will feel more enthusiastic. Optimism is contagious. Yeah, just like pessimism is. Yeah. If you're optimistic and you show that you think that we're heading in the right direction and that we are getting towards our goal, and you have the respect of your participants, which you undoubtedly do, it'll make them feel better. It'll make them feel more optimistic. And people with a goal in mind that they think they're going to reach work harder. Work harder and longer and are more enthusiastic about doing whatever it is you'd like them to do. Mm-hmm. So how else can we encourage optimism, encourage enthusiasm, really, in our group? And the idea, the hope, more than a hope, the expectation. Thank you. Yes. Yes, optimists think it's an expectation of success. Goes with it. So what else can we do? Now, this is an interesting point Elisa and others are making. You could use positive language. You could phrase everything in a positive manner. Not we can't, but let's do. Yeah, use positive verbal language. Say things in a positive manner instead of a negative manner so that people can think the answer in their heads and go, wow, I can do that, I think. Yeah, because it's been presented in a positive manner. Mm-hmm. You know, interesting point, too, that in addition to positive language, verbal language, people are saying that you can create a positive mood in the room with your enthusiasm and that you need to show confidence in reaching the goal. Mm-hmm. Create a positive mood. Create a positive atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that we can all, well, we can all think on it and find a way. Mm-hmm. Margo and others are saying, this is a good point. I didn't really think of this, but I always say that these shows are organic and they grow from your questions and from your comments. And I love to learn new things, and I always learn something on these shows they didn't think about. And that's the true goal of the group gatherings, so that we can learn from each other, yes, and get done faster and better. Mm-hmm. Mark and others are saying that you need to set clear goals so everyone understands the optimism. You know, that's a very good point. I can be very enthusiastic, and those of you who have seen me know that I am, yes, but in order to make you share my enthusiasm, share my optimism in the future and in the successful goal, in order to make you do that as a participant, I need to show you that my optimism is reasonable and that I am optimistic. I'm not that fond of subtlety. You can say, you looked enthusiastic, you must be optimistic. Well, come right out and say so. I'm optimistic about the future. I say that all the time because it gives people an optimistic model. Yeah, people aren't so sure they're supposed to be enthusiastic. Well, of course you are, because we're going to work together towards a successful goal. Mm-hmm. Yoshi and others are saying that you need reasons for optimism to be clearly spelled out so that everyone can sincerely feel hopeful. You know what? I think the most important word in there is sincerely, because sometimes people feign optimism, especially in the workplace, because they'd like to keep their job. And if they don't feign people don't think they're optimistic, then they might not. Yeah, but you need real reasons. Yeah, then we need reasons for optimism to be clearly spelled out, so that everyone can sincerely feel hopeful. Tell what it is that you're optimistic about. So it's not a secret. Yeah. So that other people can, not just by rote, not just to humor you, but they can really feel good about coming, that they're getting somewhere. I always love that. I always say that I like whatever it is, a committee, a workshop, a gathering. I like us to have a clear set of goals. I set them because I am third-party impartial or leader at the outset. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to act. You need reasons for the optimism. Show people. Caitlin says that you show why there is hope for success and you create a timeline to achieve it. Show the participants, other people, show there is why there is hope for success and create a timeline to achieve it. I think the timelines are a really good thing. I'm getting a lot of agreement. Yes, George, thank you. The problem with timelines is not the concept, and it is sometimes positive because you strive for something that even if it's like a measurement or stars or something you could actually see is often important to people. I like to set my timelines kind of far out because if I get in earlier, I'm a genius. If I get in on time, I'm pretty much genius. But if I blow it, if I blow the timeline, then everything else is skewed and people think that you're not such a genius. Yeah. And, you know, Drew was also adding, we talked about positive verbal language. He says positive body language and facial expression are good ways to convey your optimism to the participants. Look at me. Look how enthusiastic I look. Yeah, the smile never leaves my face because it's important so that others can see, oh, look, the leader thinks we're doing fine. Well, we must be doing fine. Yeah, and pass it along. We're doing fine. Yeah. So a very carefully crafted timeline. I don't know that I'm a, yeah, well, I'm getting some dissension. I think it's a good idea to make a timeline, generally. I tend not to, and I just kind of push us forward gradually and steadily. The reason being that I don't like things that you can fail to meet. Yeah, so make them far enough in advance if you're going to really do a timeline. Positive body language and facial expression. We just looked at that. You know, some people, thank you for all of your participation, are giving me practical ways to encourage optimism and to encourage thinking together. I see group meditation a lot. Group meditation on the positive thoughts. According to Nick and others, group, though, mediation. I said mediation today. Group meditation. Well, yeah, people are saying group prayer. Depends on the group, right? Can't force that on people. Can't force meditation either on people. I'm really bad at it, for example, because I'm too gregarious. People are saying just for a few moments. Just to center your thoughts. Now, I'm all in favor of centering thoughts. And maybe if it was very short and very early in the process, or maybe each time but very short, you'd have to enforce that. So group meditation. Yes, and when people start to meditate, I've been to classes and like that. I think I told the story right on the air once about my experience at a spa. And I guess I'm very kind of hyperactive. I kind of like to look at the other people when I'm meditating, and I've been told that that is not a good idea. You're supposed to have inner calming thoughts. Hey, inner calming thoughts are a very good thing to have as a group. You know, Liz and others are saying that not only meditation together or prayer together, which is a similar act, I think, that you could have before you start in. You could have the group members go around the group, depending on how big it is, and share something positive, something good, something positive. Well, all right, some people are asking if it's positive about the topics in dispute, topics in discussion. Sometimes it's a game I play on the timeouts when we're going to have some food and network. And I go, well, it depends how many people. But sometimes everybody gets their chance at the timeouts, at the networking, at the food, to say something good that happened to them during the week. It doesn't have to be anything to do with the issues in dispute. Just say something good. That leads to optimism in the room. Yeah, people are going rays of optimism and karma and like that. Well, we already said that optimism is contagious. And if I truly am optimistic, other people will be too. And then people have to think of something positive that they did or heard or whatever and relay it to the group. You know what that makes you do? All week long, you're looking for something positive so you can talk about it. Isn't that nice? Yes. We've impacted everybody's lives. They've all become optimists. We've impacted people to become more optimistic in their real life. They got to look for something good. Yeah. Kathleen says to share good examples. Well, it depends what we're doing. Can we share a good example? Well, we might be able to. Yeah. Look, this is how it was done, or this is how I did it before, or this is how I did it years ago when, well, here's an interesting tidbit, when I was in the Peace Corps, you know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And let's see, share good examples. You know, Cheryl and others are saying the trick is to, while you're sharing and while you're meditating and while you're doing all these things that bring you closer together and make you more optimistic, you can discover a new and more positive approach together. Yeah. We've got something that's not quite working out. We're not going to quit. We're not those kind of people. But we're going to discover a new and more positive approach together. Yeah. Together is the key sentence, the key part of that sentence. We're going to do it as a group so that we feel more optimistic for the future as a group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the problem with optimism? It hits obstacles, right? It doesn't always go as smoothly as we've planned. You know, and also, this is a good point, too. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Russ and others are making the point that you start out real optimistic, and then the process sort of drags. And if the leader loses enthusiasm, the group will too. Or they'll splinter off into more enthusiastic groups, or less, as the case may be. But yeah, you need to get people together, and to also, and to keep up the optimism, to keep up the karma, people calling it karma, but to keep up the positive attitude. Mm-hmm. So, we have a nice positive attitude. We're optimistic about the future. So are all of our participants. And we've decided that we're going to really concentrate and that we're going to succeed. We're going to go forward. But what happens when we hit an obstacle? Something standing in our way to our success. We didn't make it. Somehow, someone else, well, kind of did. Somebody's put up an obstacle. How do we overcome obstacles and keep our optimism? Mm-hmm. Russ and others are saying that you use reasoned group discussion of positive alternatives. This isn't going to work because they're standing in our way. We're not done. Let's find a different way. You know, sometimes it's better. And I think the reason being that you get more experience in the topic and you saw what didn't work even though you were very optimistic about it. Second time's the charm. Mm-hmm. Kristen, others are saying that you can overcome obstacles by redefining them as challenges to be successfully overcome instead of obstacles. Very good point. I did it, didn't I? Yes, we talked about using positive language. And then I called whatever it is that's holding up the successful outcome, I called them obstacles. Christus and others are saying that I have used a negative terminology. Yeah, my enthusiasm must have wavered. Because an obstacle is something that's very, very hard to get over. But she suggests by redefining the obstacles, what we called obstacles before, as challenges to be successfully overcome and not obstacles. Yeah, I say obstacle to you, I don't know what you think about. But if you say obstacle to me, I think of one of those little red cones that sits in the middle of the road and you have to go around it. We're going to go around. We're not quitting. Yeah. Group discussion. And then positive language. You know, Kinden and others are saying that one of the things you really need to do to overcome, well, a temporary problem. Yeah, see, I didn't call them obstacles. Is that you have to, I'm reading this while I'm thinking about it, that you have to have a can-do attitude. And that you also need to research what others have done before you. No sense redoing what they did, build on it. A can-do attitude, I think it's kind of an Americanism too, isn't it? It means that you just don't quit, that you always think you can do it, and you find a way. By maintaining positive, optimistic, can-do attitude. Yeah. We've got a lot of people talking about the refusal to give up, Suki and others. Yes. You know, this is a good point, too. Say we've got, well, a challenge to be overcome. We need to work not only within our own peer group, the people we came with, so to speak. We need to work with all the people in the group. Yeah, we need to get everybody together. Because otherwise, your optimism may be unfounded. Here's an interesting point, too. People are saying that the way to infuse optimism and get rid of obstacles is to network for solutions. Sometimes people in the whole big group, for one reason or another, they're shy. They don't want to be quoted, really, or they're being watched by someone who's a superior. You know, it's like having the dean of the school there. For one reason or another, they don't want to formally suggest a solution. They don't want to sit at the table, sit in the middle where everybody is serious and thinking and like that, and do anything too adventurous because it might backfire, see? Or it might turn out to be, you know, sometimes people have a solution that comes to them, and they say it in a group, for example, and it hasn't really been fleshed out. It just suddenly came to them that that would be an idea. And then people latch onto it like it's already in existence. And maybe it's a very good thing. But if it's not, sometimes people are embarrassed. So I'm real big, and this is what Recipe for Peace now really advocates, is to have a lot of time to have informal discussions, right? And one of the ways we do this is we do it with food. And I always say, and I know I'm about to say what I always say. You can find this out and see that I always say these basic things because they're so important. So when you have a timeout, when you need, tempers are flaring, you're not getting anywhere, everybody's hungry, they got to use the bathroom. But you know what I mean? It's good to have food because the food is a tool. It's not just because we are hungry. Now, we might be hungry. It might be dinner time. But that's not the purpose. The food is a tool to keep everyone in the room and talking to each other. Ah, the networking to try to find out a solution, to infuse the group with positive energy, as people are calling it. That's optimism. To be able to go up and have people kind of not in the group, kind of privately, voice an opinion that needs to be worked on, an idea that we hadn't thought about. But they didn't want to do it sitting in the formal group, because then if it doesn't work out, sometimes people are embarrassed. Yeah, I know that's not us because we are, because we're always right. No, not because we're always right, but because we are always optimistic and pushing forward. So, before we talk about the recipes, I am indeed going to say what I always say. If you're going to invite people for food, and they're going to bring something or whatever, and drinking it's kind of nice because then everybody talks about it, but you need to tell everyone, however, in the manner in which you've been communicating, that you must ask everyone, take a survey, so to speak, whether or not anyone is allergic to any kind of food, has a dietary or a religious prohibition. Don't want anyone to have a bad time. And along that same line, if you are going to have food, you need to have it labeled. Not what is it, meatloaf. No, what is in it, so that I can make a judgment as to whether or not I can eat it. Yeah, it needs to be labeled. So we need to have checked ahead of time about allergies and prohibitions, and the food needs to be clearly labeled what's in it. So, also, those of you who have been here before, thank you very much for returning, and welcome to the new people also. You know that I always say that I think the host should have a little more food. This is my own picadillo, because I hate running out. It makes for a bad party. And then people go, well, how come they pigged out and I don't have any? So I make plenty. I also think that you should have a safe recipe. Now, what on earth is a safe recipe? Well, it doesn't have too many ingredients. The ingredients would be commonly known to your audience. You know, in certain, these are ingredients that my audience would be familiar with and have eaten before and be certain that they knew that they could, because we're going to have it labeled, right? But your common ingredients might be different than mine. So you got to modify. All these recipes are worth modifying. So here we go. We're going to have a chicken and potatoes. I'm going to call it a stew. People say I call everything a stew, but it's more than a soup. It's quite thick. And I know it's got potatoes, but it is rather nice on rice. It's also rather nice on, like, vegetables. Yeah, it makes a nice presentation. So, here we go. We're going to have about a third of a cup of all-purpose flour, because we're going to take the chicken and brown it. And let's give it 2.5 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breasts. That is an item that is easy for me to get and inexpensive. If you live a place where a boneless, skinless chicken breast is not something that's available, well, cut up a whole chicken. Yeah. If you can take the bones out, just because it makes chunks, we're going to cube it. Doesn't have to be perfectly symmetrical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to cut those, like, into a just even pieces. What about 4 pieces to one half of the breast, you know what I mean? So that it makes nice chunks, nice cubes. 3 tablespoons of butter. No, do not substitute oil. A nice big onion that we're going to chop. 4 celery stalks that we're also going to chop. Mm-hmm. Going to look real nice. It's, you know, you eat with your eyes also. And it's kind of visually appealing. It's important to be visually appealing. If you do the same processing with each piece, they'll all blend together better. Yeah. And we've got three pretty big potatoes that we're going to peel, and we're going to cut into cubes also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just raw. If you're going to use canned anything, people asking questions, if you're going to use canned anything, remember to drain it, and then it's not as tough, it's not as hard, so you cook it a lot less. Yeah. Where were we? We were at the potatoes. We're going to peel and cube them. We need 4 carrots, nice big ones. We're going to give them kind of a rough chop so that they look nice. If you have a food processor, you can slice them. It's just hard to slice carrots by hand like that. 1 cup of chicken broth and 1 tablespoon of cornstarch just for keeping it thicker. Yeah. And I actually am going to put in some sugar into this, just a few tablespoons. I think it adds an extra dimension. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, if you would like, you can put in other vegetables. But this is the basic one with the potatoes and the carrots. Yes, several of you have actually seen my food. Fantabulous. Hello. Thank you for listening. It is true that for some reason, just because my family does it, and it will make it less of a safe recipe, which is why I'm not telling about it. This is a basic recipe. You can add any kind of vegetables you like. Make sure that the trick is, before you serve it, to have the chicken be really cooked through, and the vegetables too. The whole thing has to be edible. I actually use a strange little thing called pimentos. They're like little peppers that come in a jar, and I chop them up. I drain them and pat them dry, and I chop them up just for the color, because they make a nice taste. But that's kind of eccentric, and a lot of people have never eaten a pimento, so they won't know if they can or not. That would make it more of an adventure recipe. So, here we go. We're going to put the flour just on the counter, just kind of spread it around, or in a little bowl. A little bowl really works better, because then you can keep it together. And we're going to cook the chicken chunks, cook the cubes. We're going to melt that butter. And we're going to brown the chicken in the butter, first off, on all sides so that they're all cooked all the way around. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to either push the chicken away or put it on a plate, depending on how big your pot is. We're going to add the onion and the celery. Another couple of minutes, huh? Cook them all around. Then we're going to add the potatoes and the carrots. Mm-hmm. I like to give them a little cook all around, too. Now, into that hot pot with the potatoes and the carrots and the onions and the celery and like that, we are going to, well, let's think about this. Wait, back up. We're going to take the broth, the cornstarch, and we're going to whisk the whole thing until it's pretty smooth. Yes, you can put a little bit of other flavoring in there. This is an interesting point. People are saying Dijon mustard. I have indeed done that. To my palate, it makes it a little bit kind of horseradishy, kind of stronger. You have to know if your people will like it. But combine the broth and the cornstarch, stir them, whisk them, and then you stir it into the skillet. The reason you have the cornstarch is it's a thickening agent, yeah. So we've got the broth and the cornstarch incorporated. We're now pouring it into the skillet with the vegetables. Mm-hmm. Bring it to a boil. Yeah. You're going to put our chicken in there, yeah? Bring the whole thing to a boil, reduce the heat, simmer it, 20 minutes, till everything's soft and delicious. Make sure your chicken is cooked through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we add the broth and the cornstarch, we whisked them. We added it to the pot with everything in it, including the chicken. Reduce the heat, cover. 20 minutes, maybe, until the vegetables are nice and not squishy, but really, really edible and ready to go. So that is our chicken and potatoes. Mm-hmm. It is a safe recipe. because most people are not allergic to the ingredients, but of course we would have labeled them. And where I am, at least, and that's what counts for you, where you are, most people would have eaten the ingredients and be familiar with them and know if they couldn't eat them. I don't like anybody to have a bad time. So that is the adventure recipe. Serve it over rice, serve it with rice. A big rice cooker on the side, of course, and some condiments. Sometimes people like to gussy it up with something stronger. And yes, I have been accused of cooking bland. The reason being is that I have a bunch of condiments up on the counter, just in their original bottles, so you can see what they are, so that people can add spice if they want. Do you like jalapenos in this? Not everybody does, though. You have to balance that. So we're on to our adventure recipe. Now, what makes this an adventure recipe? Well, it's full of all kinds of things that a lot of people cannot or should not or have a prohibition against. It's got sausage and shrimp. That's pork and shrimp. So you have to know. No people can do it. So we're going to get ourselves some nice sauce. Here's the recipe. We're going to get us about 1.5 pounds of sausages. When you cook sausage, if it's in a real casing, you need to prick it. You know that, prick it with a knife a little bit so they don't kind of blow up. Yeah. And we're going to have the sausage. Let's get 3 tablespoons of oil in addition to the sausage fat that we're going to have. 1/4 cup of flour. 3 stalks of celery. We're going to chop it up. A nice green pepper. Seed and devein and chop. Do the same to a nice red pepper. Seed, devein, and chop. Nice onion, we're going to chop. Remember that we use the same sizing for all the pieces so that it looks nice. The last one, we cubed everything. This one, we're going to chop everything just because it makes it a little better and easier to cook. So we've got our green pepper, we've got our red pepper, we've got a nice onion, we're going to chop it. Let's have about 16 ounces of chicken broth. If you're a finer person than I am, you have made it and it's sitting in the fridge. Let's face it, I'm going to use canned. So it's a nice big can. Not too much water because we've got the chicken broth. I like to look at it and make sure that I'm not over-liquiding. So I would say about 1/2 cup of water, but keep it to the side a little bit until you see if you need it. I'm going to use frozen spinach. It's readily available to me. That means that it is basically pre-cooked also. I'm going to thaw it and pat it dry so that I don't have excess water or, heavens to Betsy, ice molecules. Yeah. So we've got a nice big package of spinach. They come in, about a 12-ounce size? Yeah. Let's give a few pinches of dried thyme, about 1/4 teaspoon. A couple of bay leaves. Remember to fish them out. Otherwise, some guest of yours is going to be chomping on a bay leaf. And give it 2 pounds of shrimp. Please don't use the ones with the shells unless you're going to shell and devein them. In my area, it is easy to find shrimp that is prepped. In fact, they're pre-cooked, never mind prepped. They're also frozen. Remember my rule about thaw and pat dry. But 2 pounds shelled and deveined. If you can't find them shelled and deveined, just processed like that, well, you can take the time to do it. And I'm not going to explain it. Just look on YouTube and I'll show you how to devein and shell a shrimp. It's kind of a nuisance. It's a big time. It takes quite a bit of time. So you might reconsider this recipe if you have to do that. But anyway, 2 pounds of shrimp. I like the nice size ones and not the little squiggly ones that don't have any taste. Yeah. Doesn't have to be prawns, but it has to be shrimp. Yeah. And let's have a cup of, let's do a whole big rice cooker of rice. Just on the side. All cooked and everything. We're not going to use it in, we're going to use it on the side. So we've got all our ingredients, right? Let's get ourselves a nice big pot because we're going to use it all the way around. And we're going to, first of all, cook the sausage. It'll make some grease in the pan, too, which is good. So we're going to have the sausage. We're going to cook them all the way around until they're nice and brown, right? Well, it takes about 10 minutes. and we're going to transfer them out and we're going to slice them up. Why don't you use them sliced right in the pot? It would be faster. You could. It will also make them a little tougher on the outside. Yeah, and that's not such an idea. So we've cooked our sausage, right? And we've got it out onto a plate. We've sliced it up. In the pan now, we have quite a bit of sausage dripping, so to speak. You got to take a look at it. You'd like some of the sausage drippings because they're yummy, but it might make the whole thing too greasy, right? So leave about a tablespoon or two in the pan and get rid of the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to add a little bit of oil. You could use just the sausage drippings. It'll make it kind of greasy, though. I think you should get the sausage drippings down to a minimum, just like a tablespoon or so. They're all over the bottom of the pan anyhow, the little bits. And, yes, and you want to keep those, of course, and scrape them up. And now we're going to add the oil because it doesn't have much taste, right? Right. It's going, and it won't be as greasy. So we're going to heat it all up. We're going to stir in the flour into the oil and the butter and the grease. Remember the butter, uh-huh. Until it turns kind of beige, kind of brownish. This is what's known as making a roux. I'm ordinarily not big on that, but you need to thicken the sauce. Mm-hmm. So we've got the flour with the oil and the butter sausage drip mixings. Stir it all up. It'll turn brown. Do not turn your back on the darn thing. Take my word for it. I don't know how I would know this. But if you turn your back on it and don't stir it constantly, it'll flare up and burn. Mm-hmm. And make smoke and stuff. Yeah. Okay. Now we've got the flour and oil mixture, the roux. Now we're going to add the celery, the peppers, the onion. And we're going to basically stir fry them until they're tender, which takes, what, about 10 minutes? Not too much longer. Mm-hmm. You remember that sausage that we sliced up? Put it back in now. We're now going to stir in the broth, the spinach, which we have thoroughly thawed and patted dry and separated. You know how spinach comes in kind of a square, if you're not careful. Some of them don't anymore. They come in a nicer-looking package. But in any event, you need to thaw it. Mm-hmm. So we've got the roux going. We've got the vegetables going and like that. We're going to stir in the broth, the spinach, the thyme, and the bay leaf. Because mm-hmm. we've got the liquid going. You boil it, heat it up to boiling. Mm-hmm. Reduce the heat, and you cover it. And you simmer the thing for about 15 minutes so it gets all nicely incorporated. Now, where, you're asking, are the shrimp? Yes, this is called shrimp and sausage stew. Mm-hmm. They're coming. If you cook shrimp too far in advance, they will go rubbery. Yes, you need to throw them in at the last minute. If you are using raw shrimp, they need to turn color. They need to be cooked through completely. Quite frankly, if you are using the frozen kind, a lot of times they're pre-cooked. They don't need as much cooking. So you have to look and you have to see how cold they are because they need to be frosted. Okay, we've got this whole thing. We've simmered it. Now we add the shrimp. If they're raw, it won't take very long. Maybe everything is very hot and you want to cook the shrimp until they're opaque, until they're not... Well, slimy looking is not very polite, but you know what I mean. So that they look really cooked through, because you don't want to serve people raw shrimp. This is not sushi. And it'll take like 3 minutes. If they are pre-cooked, well, you need to heat them through, and they need to be hot, same 3 minutes, not much longer. Remember to pull out the bay leaf, and you are done. You have a delightful sausage and shrimp stew. I like it over rice. Delicious. The rice cooker comes out. Yeah, lots of rice. I always serve rice on the side so that people can take as much or as little as they want. If you like pasta, lovely over pasta. Those of you who have been here before, and thank you for coming back, know that I think if you're going to serve pasta, it should be the kind that is not long strings, long noodles, because it is harder to handle in a group. It'll make a bigger mess. I think it should be something like a what do they call the corkscrew ones? Rotini? Yeah. That you can just spoon out. Something easy to handle. Easy to eat, too, I might add. Yeah, cut down on the stains. Anyway, so that is our adventure recipe. Why is it an adventure recipe? Well, it's filled with things that people have prohibitions against. Sausage, which is pork, and shrimp, which is shellfish. Yeah. So, you have to ask in advance. But it is yummy if it's possible for people to eat it. Well, thank you for all of your participation. Yes. And I see that our time together is nearly over. My goodness, that went fast. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Please do come again. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, including this one, just as soon as we get off the air, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for coming. Please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.